to be honest, it's sad to say that we lose it. Because as you go along and you're passing it from one person to the other, some of them,
changes.
It changes.
Yeah.
You know, we do get people that are probably not as invested in keeping their cultural heritage and passing it down to their kids. The views expressed in this podcast does not represent the views of the Organization of American States, its Secretary General, or its member states. Keep listening to find out more on this episode.
Welcome to The Zone, a podcast that serves as a platform for constructive dialogue among those of us who live in the adjacency zone on relevant issues with a local perspective, presented by young people from Belize and Guatemala under the coordination of the OAS office in the adjacency zone and with the support of the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation. Before starting today's conversation, I am thrilled to share with our audience that we have reached our 24th episode. We have had four great seasons, and it's been a pleasure to have learned so much from Belize and Guatemala through every single episode we have prepared.
Jocelyn, indeed, I'm also very thankful for sharing this space with you, and I'm also very thankful to our audience for all their messages and their comments and for interacting with us, as it demonstrates your continuous interest in our topics. We have prepared a compilation of bloopers from our previous videos to highlight the fun times we've had while recording all these episodes. As you know, not everything is perfect, of course, that is the end product that you guys get, but it's always good to have fun on set.
Tenemos un público de cuatro personas detrás de cámara ahorita que no se escucha.
¿Qué dije?
Even though they were sorry.
Okay.
After 24 episodes, I believe we've covered so much ground on a wide range of topics, from ending the violence against women and girls, passing by social media and networks, to risk reduction management in the agricultural sector.
Before we move on, because this is the month of March, we do want to celebrate women out there. So women, you are empowered, and we all know that empowered women empower women. So big up to all the women out there.
Amen.
Now that you mentioned it, Benji, it has been quite a learning experience for all of us as the host of The Zone podcast, but also for our audience. We hope you have learned something new and that every episode was a spark of greater conversations among your friends and family members.
That is right. And to close these four seasons, we will be discussing the wonderful cultural heritage of Belize and Guatemala, as well as addressing the challenges of preserving intangible cultural practices and concluding by taking a look at the future of culture in our communities.
That is correct, Benji. And that reminds me of the episode on natural heritage sites, which you can find linked in the description of this video, where we explore the natural heritage sites of Belize and Guatemala and the region.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to it. Let's start by defining what is cultural heritage. Jocelyn, I'll allow you to go ahead and do that.
According to the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization Convention concerning the protection of the world cultural and natural heritage, it defines cultural heritage as monuments, group of buildings, sites, architectural works, works of monumental sculpture and painting, elements or structures of an archaeological nature, inscriptions, cave dwellings, and combinations of features, groups of separate or connected buildings, works of man or the combined works of nature and man, and areas including archaeological sites which are of outstanding universal value from the historical, aesthetic, ethnological, art, science, or anthropological point of view. It is an extensive definition.
Yeah, it is a very extensive definition. That is what I was going to say. So that is to tell you that cultural heritage is huge. And we can probably sit here all day and talk about it. But thanks so much for sharing, Jocelyn, that definition with us. But before moving forward, I will also like to add some nuance to the concept of you shared. Because most of what is covered in that definition is related to tangible heritage, in contraposition to intangible cultural heritage. So what do you say if we explain those nonce concepts to our audience?
And when we talk about tangible cultural heritage, based on the UNESCO, it refers to physical artifacts produced, maintained, and transmitted intergenerationally in a society. So it includes artistic creations, built heritage such as buildings and monuments, and other physical or tangible products of human creativity. And these are invested with cultural significance in a society.
Now, regarding intangible cultural heritage, based on the UNESCO's Convention for Safeguarding of the Intangible Cultural Heritage, refers to practices, representations, expressions, knowledge, skills, as well as the instruments, objects, artifacts, and cultural space associated therewith that communities, groups, and in some cases, individuals recognize as part of their cultural heritage. Examples of intangible heritage are oral traditions, performing arts, local knowledge, and traditional skills.
So these are more like soft skills that are passed on from generation to generation, where our tangible artifacts or tangible history is basically things
what you can actually see. Yeah, in person and touch. You know, we can look at the Belizean side, for example. I think part of our cultural heritage being the many Mayan temples and Mayan cities that we have. Honestly, it's crazy to think that millions of people inhabited our very small country, and now we're down to 400,000. But if you look at the Maya history and the way they interacted with the Maya population over at Naranjo, for example, from Shunantunich to Caracol, Lobanton, and all these sites in the country.
Yeah, and some of these sites are actually what we call satellite sites, where, you know, like, they use these different sites to communicate with each other. And there have been different pathways identified that connected each one of these.
That is right.
So it's very impressive. And this is what we call our cultural heritage.
Right. And, well, those are the tangible ones. Now, a little bit about the intangible ones. We're looking at practices that are passed down through generations. Now, that is
the
a little bit
stories, for example,
the
all
folklore stories
that are passed down in tradition,
religion, you know, and sometimes, to be honest, it's sad to say that we lose it, because as you go along and you're passing it from one person to the other, some of them
changes.
It changes. You know, we do get people that are probably not as invested in keeping their cultural heritage and passing it down to their kids, so they allow them to just, you know what, whatever it is that you learn at school, that's about it.
I actually have a question for you guys. Do you guys in the audience know of any oral traditions, like stories that your parents or your grandparents used to tell you, or that might be a scary story that someone told you and you were always afraid of it?
Let us know in the comment section. I would very much love to go and read it as well, you know, because it gets really interesting. Everyone, and you know what's the funny thing? Again, cultural heritage, everyone has different versions of the same story.
Yeah.
And that is how you know that it changes. That is how you know that everyone is just diverse and perhaps either change it themselves or it has been changed by the time it gets to them.
I am sure that our audience wonders why it is necessary to safeguard our cultural heritage.
And that is a very fair question. I mean, we tend to take our cultural heritage for granted, but no, we must take action to safeguard it and ensure that it is preserved. It's also important to highlight that tangible and intangible heritage require different approaches for preservation and safeguarding.
That's right. And before moving forward, I would like to add that by safeguarding, we refer to the concept of transferring and protecting knowledge, skills, and meaning from one generation to the next one to keep it for world heritage. And it goes back to exactly what you've mentioned about when we pass it on from one generation onto the other, there's always something that's getting lost in between there. So we have to ensure that it is passed on just as we learned it to keep it safe.
I mean, for whatever reason, at some point, we end up not passing down all this important information, keeping it in black and white, keeping it on the internet. Very, very powerful tool, you know, will help us to preserve all that cultural heritage. What do you think about that?
I think that is definitely important. And one of the things that we need to mention, not just here in Belize and Guatemala, but worldwide, is the loss of this specific cultural heritage, the language aspect of it. Because while we do note that tangible cultural heritage is important, there's also the intangible part that is being lost, and that is a lot more common than to lose the tangible ones. And now that we have English being the standard language for almost every country out there, think about it. All these different dialects spoken, all these different languages that were spoken aren't being spoken anymore because the primary language you're being taught is English.
You know, I think it can be a powerful tool to still speak English, but preserve your native language.
Yeah,
you know?
Preserve that native language while also being able to learn the standard.
That is right.
Don't lose what you already have in order to try to learn something that will help you, yes, But you're going to lose something that was very important, not just to you, to your grandparents, your father, your mother, your entire history.
Absolutely. And now that we have a better understanding of the importance of cultural heritage, let's dive into the cultural heritage of Belize and Guatemala with a particular focus on the adjacency zone.
Exactly. Now, both Belize and Guatemala are rich in cultural heritage. They have a long and complex history that dates back to the ancient Mayan civilization, as we have mentioned. Now, the Mayan civilization developed sophisticated systems of writing, mathematics, astronomy, and architecture. Many of their monumental structures, such as pyramids and temples, still stand today and are considered to be among the most impressive and significant cultural heritage sites in the world.
That's right. And beyond the Maya civilization, Belize and Guatemala also have a rich history of colonialism, which influences from Spanish, British, and French cultures. This has resulted in a unique blend of cultural heritage that is visible in the architecture, food, music, and tradition of both countries.
Absolutely. And in recent years, there has been a growing awareness of the importance of preserving and protecting cultural heritage sites, particularly in the adjacency zone. I would like us to explore a bit more about the threats affecting both tangible and intangible cultural heritage.
Let's do that. I'll start by discussing the dangers to tangible cultural heritage. Imminent dangers include serious deterioration of materials and structures, loss of historical authenticity, and cultural significance. Potential dangers are modifications of juridical status, lack of conservation policy, and threatening impacts of environmental factors.
Now, if we dive into it, intangible cultural heritage is also at risk due to negative attitudes, demographic issues, decontextualization, and environmental degradation. Other dangers include weakened practice and transmission, cultural globalization, loss of objects or systems, and economic pressure, some of which we've already discussed when we're saying that we're using standardized language, standardized practices for everything. Yeah. We're losing part of this culture.
I'd like to add as well there that I think cultural appropriation is something that we see a lot worldwide with people that are not part of a certain cultural group wanting to be part of it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong, because culture doesn't boil down to race. It boils down to what you really practice and what you believe in. But many at times, these people don't have the creme de la creme per se, you know, they don't have the actual what it is about. And then when they end up passing on information, it's not factual. It's not what it really should be. Now, when it comes to the threats or dangers faced by intangible cultural heritage, it gets a little bit more nuanced.
There are many interrelated issues that could affect intangible heritage. For starters, we have negative attitudes, such as repressive policies, intolerance, and disrespect. Demographic issues include rural-urban migration and population influx. And decontextualization, such as touristification and other commercialization, environmental degradation poses potential dangers to intangible cultural heritage when it comes to climate change and the degradation of ecosystems. So not only is the environment that we are currently living in playing a significant role in the preservation of our monumental sites or our cultural heritage, because if we boil down to it, whenever we have increases, for example, in rain pressure, in water, we have continuous washing away or degradation of like the soils and all the material that makes up these sites.
Yeah, you're right. And when we speak about the commercialization and the way tourism affects the cultural heritage, we look at many at times, I'm not pointing fingers at tour guides, but many at times, I mean, I'm a certified tour guide, so I know, but some tour guides sometimes would add information that is not factual. Sometimes we see things being taken out of context or blown out of proportion just for the sake of it, for it to sound like, you know,
it's something huge. Huger.
It's more about, I don't know, it can even boil down to science fiction sometimes, the way they express themselves. So all of that plays a huge, huge role. And it is very unfortunate that there's almost no way of controlling that. Because I'll speak about the Belize Tourism Board, for example. When they do their tour guiding certifications, everyone has to go through a test. That final exam, once you pass it, you're good to go. But there's nobody beside you to say that you're following
these rules.
So yes, you did that because you had to pass your test or your exam. But then when you're out there actually sharing the information, it really boils down to you having good moral beginnings and in saying that I will do the right thing.
So we need more accountability on the table, especially addressing this preservation of cultural heritage.
That is right.
We need people to stick to it and to actually tell it like it is.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to say. Tell it like it is. Following the list of dangers to intangible cultural heritage, we have weakened practices and transmission due to the loss of significance. And by this, we mean people that are no longer interested in teaching their kids, you know, what their culture is all about. And then, you know, the significance of it, the importance of it, how vital it is for their culture is totally lost. We also have a diminishing youth interest and hampered transmission. Cultural globalization, including educational standardization. We look at a British school system, for example, would never really and truly indulge what the cultural heritage and beliefs should be about. Yes, there are cultural days are promoted. Yes, there are certain times of the year where you know, it is included, but it's not really the core of the entire system itself. We also have rapid social cultural changes and social media. So we look at the new generations, baby boomers, we have the Gen Zs and people that are now in. Yeah, so millennials, you know, they're on social media. I'm probably part of one of those groups. So we are on social media. Yeah, let me rephrase. We are on social media and sometimes we want to follow trends. And most of the times trends come from Asia and the United States of America. So even if it doesn't resonate to our culture, we are still going to follow through with it. You know, TikTok being one of the most powerful apps widely used, worldwide now, being one of the things that really is influencing music, fashion, culture, your beliefs, everything, literally even politics. So that is what we're talking about when we say social media is really, really affecting our cultural heritage.
Yeah, not to downplay on social media, but while it is an important and powerful tool, it can also be impacting our communities and our culture negatively. And like you said, if we are using all of these things just to learn of standardization methods or to use some other trend that we've learned, then what part of it are we using to promote our own culture?
Yeah, I mean, responsibly using these apps is very important. Another thing is, as well, is new products and techniques, such as industrial production and use of modern materials.
Yeah, that's where you mentioned industrialization, where some of the techniques that we learned through our heritage are no longer being used because they might be considered inefficient or they're not as effective as it would have been in those ages. Now we have machines, we have technology, we have larger workforces doing the work. So there's no need for us to continue practicing.
It's about, you know, the advancements in technology and so many robots being used to carry out, you know, different operations in a factory.
20 years ago, you had a cameraman and a pilot and you had all of these different men doing all these roles. And now all you need is a drone.
That is right. You're totally right. So we also have the loss of objects or systems, such as the loss of ancestral language, cultural spaces, and knowledge. All right. So we look back at the use of all these Mayan sites. You know, I've seen some rituals being done or some ceremonial rituals being done at the different Maya sites. You know, we've seen Maya weddings in Belize. Mm-hmm. They're not rampant, though. Just a few would do it. I've seen ceremonies over in Guatemala, you know, referencing to Guatemala as well, in Tikal. I've seen, you know, different ceremonies being done there. And at least that, you know, is keeping their cultural heritage alive. But I think that we need to do it a lot more.
People in the comments, you should actually tell us how often do you practice all these cultural beliefs, these cultural practices, because come on, if it boils down, how often do we actually celebrate it throughout the year? It comes one celebration for culture and that's it. And everybody forgets about it. You're totally right.
Another thing is economic pressure due to rapid economic transformation, insufficient financial resources or remuneration. We look at blue and white collar jobs, for example. Sometimes they don't resonate to our culture. Sometimes they don't resonate to our moral beginnings or what we believe in, what we learned when we were growing up. And we just need to basically fit in because we want to have
a box.
Yes, you basically have to, you're in a box and you have to fit in to get that job. You have to fit in to keep that job, to become the boss. You need to get educated. You end up falling under a different educational system that is not going to really support your cultural heritage. And all these things eventually just water down your culture.
And that's what we see in our education system as well, where we talked about education standardization. It's the same thing, because you need to fit into the education system and to fit into all these constructs, you're forgetting about everything that made you who you are, your culture, your history, your parents' history, your grandparents' history, all of it.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear on something, though, we're not saying that the educational systems are bad. We're just saying that everyone needs to take personal, and then you also need to take personal responsibility in doing your own homework in preserving your culture.
Definitely. So as we can tell, intangible cultural heritage is so delicate that it could be affected by a plurality of interrelated issues.
That is correct. And that is the main reason why the UNESCO developed a specific convention, the Convention for the Safeguarding of the Intangible Cultural Heritage, to ensure the conservation and preservation of cultural heritage to a series of specific recommendations, always leaving the responsibility to lead the way in terms of safeguarding to local communities and ethnic groups, since they know better how and what to preserve as their cultural heritage and oral practice.
I really like what you just mentioned, Benji, and it's so simple yet so powerful and full of truth, and it sets the scene for our next segment. As we have seen, intangible cultural heritage is so nuanced and delicate that we need to ensure different ways to safeguard it. So, we will focus on intangible cultural practices of Belize and Guatemala in our next segment.
That is right. In the case of Belize, natural resources and archaeological sites attract thousands of tourists to visit each year. But today I want to focus on the language, dance, and music of the Garifuna. And let me rephrase, the Garinago people, because Garifuna is the language, which was inscribed in 2008 on the representative list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity.
Perhaps you can share more on this specific culture so that our audience also understands value as to why it made the list.
According to UNESCO, the Garifuna language belongs to the Arawak group of languages and has survived centuries of discrimination and linguistic domination. It is rich in tales, originally recited during wakes or large gatherings.
Any words you might know, Benji, that you want to teach us here?
To be honest with you, I might know a couple, not from the Arawak group themselves, because you know that their language has definitely evolved over time. But in the Garifuna culture, there are a lot of, for example, if someone looks at you or says hi and you say kataisa, that means what's up? You know, there are a lot of words that are very useful in the Garifuna language, and oftentimes there's a misconception. The language name is Garifuna, but the group's name, the people, is Garinago. All right, so I know sometimes even us Belizeans might, you know, mix up those words, but yeah, it's just part of, you know, sometimes we forget what in reality it is. In terms of music, the melodies bring together African and Amerindian elements and the texts that are veritable repository of the history and traditional knowledge of the Garifuna, such as cassava growing, fishing, canoe building, and the construction of baked mud houses. There is also a considerable amount of satire in these songs, which are accompanied, by various drums and dances, which the spectators may join. The dance is called the Wanaragua, and it's a dance performed primarily during the Christmas holidays, which was originally a way for the Garifuna people to mock their colonial era masters. Imagine, it's so strong, their colonial era so strong, that it comes all the way to now, and they have a whole dance to continue. I don't know if I would want to really have something that will keep reminding me of the colonial days, but it's part of their culture and
part of history.
And it's part of history, so we can't take it away.
I really appreciate you sharing all this valuable knowledge on the Garifuna culture. Moving on to the representative list of the Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity, 2008, the Rabinal Achi dance drama tradition was added to represent Guatemala.
Please share some more of this dance, because I've never really heard about it. And I believe that our listeners from Belize and even Guatemala would definitely appreciate learning more about it.
Now, people, if y'all haven't heard about this, the Rabinal Achi is a dynastic Maya drama, which according to the UNESCO developed in the 15th century and is a rare example of preserved pre-Hispanic traditions. It comprises myths of origin and addresses popular and political subjects concerning the inhabitants of the region of Rabinal, expressed through mass dance, theater, and music.
Now, one of the threats affecting the survival of this dance includes the sequel of armed conflicts, as well as the precarious economic situation of the practitioners and the community. It is also confronted with folklorization, which seriously threatens the transmission of knowledge and values associated with the performance of this cultural tradition.
Okay, so you mentioned a unique term, Benji, and this was folklorization, right? For our audience, this refers to the restylization or adaptation of traditional cultural expressions so that they become less complex aesthetically and semantically and are easier to replicate for broader audiences. But in this process, there is a greater risk of losing its significance and hampering its transmission and practice. We should take a quick look at a clip of the performance to get a visual representation of what we are talking about. And again, as we have mentioned before, this is how we water down our culture, because we are making it a standard practice so that other people can also understand it. But in the process, we also lose part of it.
So you're totally right.
Let us get into this video so we can see some more.
Baile drama Rabinalachi es un baile de origen precolombino. Estaba desde antes de que vinieran los españoles a estas tierras. El baile drama Rabinalachi se refiere a una lucha entre pueblos, del pueblo Rabinaleo y el pueblo Quiché.
Now, something unique that we noticed about this dance is the belief that by taking part in the performance, the living get in contact with the dead, now represented by masks. Recalling their ancestors is not simply a means of perpetuating the heritage of the past. It is also a vision of the future. For one day, the living will join their ancestors. And this is, I think this is something that is practiced in a lot of different cultures.
Correct.
Where you dress up as your relatives, as your deceased ones, because in the end, we all join them. We all have to follow that same path. And it's just a way to keep that alive, to keep their memories alive as well.
Now, shifting our focus to the adjacent zone, despite not having any specific intangible cultural heritage inscribed on the list, it is still great for us to discuss the culture that is very much alive and in some ways similar in our communities.
Now, let's dig into this a little bit more. One of the most prominent cultural practices in this region is the preservation of oral traditions. The Maya people, for example, have a rich oral history that has been passed down from generation to generation through storytelling, songs, and dance.
And let's not forget about the traditional rituals that are still practiced in this region, such as limpias. This is a traditional Maya ceremony that involves a spiritual cleansing of a person's body and soul.
And with specific herbs too, because you can't mix it up.
All right, so and it's also performed by a healer or a shaman that is meant to remove negative energy and restore balance and harmony to the individual.
Yeah, and oftentimes we have seen this not only in the person, but also in your homes. Whenever your home needs a limpia, you're going to get that shaman into your home. Now, some of the festive events are also an important part of the cultural heritage in this region. Some of the most significant includes Día de los Muertos, Día de la Virgen, and Día del Cristo Negro. These events are celebrated with parades, music, dance, and traditional food. And if there's one thing I can tell you about Benque, even though this is a religious tradition, it's also part of our culture when it comes down to Easter. Have you seen the floor mats?
Yeah.
All right. So that is one of the biggest and most attractive sites for Easter time, which is right around the corner, let me say. And it actually does continue being passed on, not just from generation to generation, but it's something that youth look forward to practicing. So they keep this tradition alive.
And let's not forget about traditional craftsmanship, which is still an important part of the cultural heritage of this region. The Maya people, for example, are known for their intricate weaving and embroidery, while the Garifuna people are skilled in basket weaving and wood carving.
And again, as we mentioned, some of the practices that we are seeing nowadays aren't just specific to one culture, because as we now can see, there have been interchanges in these cultures. So not only is it the Maya practicing these, but also the Garifuna and also the Hispanic cultures. Even our modern day societies are continuing to practice these. And while they may not necessarily have the essence or the creme de la creme of where it came from and how it started, it's still a culture, it's still a tradition and a practice that is being passed on.
Yeah, you're right.
And now, as we want to address, all of these cultural practices are a testament to the rich and diverse heritage of Belize and Guatemala. It's important that we continue to recognize and celebrate these practices, as they are a vital part of our shared cultural identity.
You're right, and absolutely. And let's not forget that preserving and promoting cultural heritage can also have economic benefits, such as attracting tourists and creating jobs in the cultural sector. Unfortunately, once again, it can also lead to commercialization, and it's a lot of pros and cons, so the economy definitely benefits from it. But who knows how long it is going to benefit from it. I hate to be devil's advocate to a certain extent. If we're not
preserving what
we need. But we need to preserve, all right? Preserve your cultural heritage, and that's what this episode is all about.
Yes, and that is important that we work together to ensure that these cultural practices are protected and preserved for future generations. So it's not just about the today. It's not just about what happened yesterday, but it's also about what's to come. So how can we continue promoting and safeguarding it for our next generations to come so that they also learn from this and they also get to promote it as well? Now, some of these practices also include supporting local artists and artisans, promoting cultural tourism, and investing in cultural infrastructure. So don't just simply walk by a shop and be like, oh, that looks pretty, you know, because by purchasing these things or by promoting them or even sharing them on your social media blog, you're telling people, hey, this is what we have to offer. This is something that has been passed down from our families, from our traditions, from our culture, and this is something that we want to keep alive. And by supporting them, you're also supporting the safeguarding of these cultures.
And this reminds me that we should not question whether certain practices are specific to local culture as well, but rather focus on whether it helps individuals to feel part of one or different communities and to feel part of society at large.
As we mentioned before, some of the challenges in safeguarding intangible cultural heritage can be grouped into 9 groups, and they are negative attitudes such as ongoing conflicts, demographic issues, including rural-urban migration, decontextualization, which includes the touristification and environmental degradation, things like natural disasters, weakened practice and transmission, and of course, because of diminished youth interest and cultural globalization, we have mass media and new techniques, modern materials, and loss of significance or knowledge economic pressures from insufficient financial resources. So there's a whole list of these things that are affecting the safeguarding of this cultural heritage. And I have to acknowledge that some of these things we can actually combat together, but it has to be everyone pulling in together to say, you know what, this is enough. We have to protect our cultural heritage. And
yeah, you know, and what I get from it is that it's a huge, huge challenge to safeguard, you know, your cultural heritage, and not only for institutions, but for the communities as well.
Yeah, and it can't boil down to just one individual or one group of individuals, because while they keep it going, there's always new people coming in, and you have to ensure that not only are the older generations invested, but also the youth. And you have to get more people involved. You have to carry out this message to a larger group.
You're right. You're right. And one of the traits that I can assume has more relation to Belize and Guatemala is that of touristification or over tourism. This term refers to the adoption of tourist services, which lead to a loss of significance and distorted practice over the intangible cultural representations that tend to become over commercialized. And again, it boils down to tour guides. It boils down to drivers, teachers. It boils down to general public as well, sharing misinformation or sharing wrong information in general.
Precisely.
You know, all these things play a huge role.
A positive impact of this is that the income generated incentivizes the preservation and enhancement of intangible cultural practices. And because the income generated can be invested in initiatives to help their long-term survival, more people can continue practicing these activities and more people can continue promoting these cultures.
Yeah, and the relationship between tourism and culture is delicate though. And there needs to be a balance between development and preservation without changing the nature and significance of such ceremonies or any other practice in general.
Now, for all those who care and wish to add to the safeguarding of a specific intangible cultural or oral memory practice that exists in your community, it can be done by taking a small tradition and expanding its audience by conceptualizing mainstream using technology without harming the practice.
One way is to support organizations and initiatives that are working to preserve cultural heritage in the region. And this can also include funding for conservation efforts as well as supporting local communities and organizations that are working to preserve their traditions and cultural practices.
Another way, Benji, that we can definitely discuss is to support organizations and initiatives that are working to preserve cultural heritage in the region. This can include funding for conservation efforts as well as supporting local communities and organizations that are working to preserve their traditions and cultural practices. Now, again, as we mentioned the importance of youth, we have stressed this so many times before. It is important that we provide youths with training opportunities and exposure to these intangible practices, because when mixed with new technological advances and trends, they can become the next community mediators and thus be a positive impact on intangible practices. that, of course, are in need of protection in our communities.
But the raising of awareness and education at higher levels is also very much important to cater not only for the kids, not only for those that are already practicing, but for those people that have lost their true sense of their background and their true sense of the cultural heritage that they come from.
Exposure isn't just for already for those who are already practicing this, but it's for those who don't know about it, who have never heard of it, or probably knew about it, but just don't know the essence of it. So let's get them exposed, not just do awareness campaigns if you have to, but continue supporting all these different organizations and groups that are practicing these, right? So with that, we sadly come to the end of our podcast series. As we've mentioned, this is the 24th and last episode. And like we said, we've had four wonderful seasons. So my dear audience, it has been a privilege to bring to you stories and perspectives from young people in Belize and Guatemala. And we hope that you have found them as insightful and inspiring as we have. Because, I mean, why not?
That is right. And before you start crying, we want to express our gratitude to all our listeners for tuning in and supporting us throughout this journey. We also want to extend a special thanks to the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation and the Organization of American States for their invaluable support in making this podcast a possibility.
Now, moving forward, I hope that you guys have learned so much from this episode and all the other episodes that we presented so far. We encourage you to stay connected with us on our Twitter page at OAS Belize Guate, where we will continue to share updates and events happening in the adjacency zone of Belize and Guatemala.
Totally, totally right. And do not forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can revisit all of our past episodes and stay updated on any future projects that we may undertake.
Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this journey of cultural exchange and discovery. It has been a pleasure sharing the voices of young people in this unique part of the world with you. Thank you, Benji, and let's get it on.